Welcome, everyone. This is Sparkle On with Davey Jags. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth. And today, I am so excited to have someone that embodies what Sparkle is. This is Cindy Gallup. She has 30 years of marketing and advertising experience, and she is CEO of the company Make Love, Not Porn. She also likes to call herself the Michael Bay of business, saying that she likes to blow shit up. I came across Cindy, I think, over her viral TED Talk, where she is the only one in history to say, come on my face, multiple times in her TED Talk. But she really is breaking the stigma and stereotypes around sex education, and specifically the porn industry. I am someone that deeply cares about representation of consensual sex, and this company is really what I think is pushing the needle. And Sparkle is all about your different identities and how to not conform to what you're supposed to do. And so I really wanted to have Cindy on here today to talk about building Make Love, Not Porn. So thank you for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, so I wanted to start out with basically how you got involved with Make Love Not Porn before it became this company. You have 30 years of amazing marketing and advertising experience. Business Insider named you one of the best marketers, and you are also one of the most followed people on Twitter for advertising. So can you go into a little bit of your professional history?
Sure. And you know, the key thing here, Davey, is that, you know, everything in my life and career has happened by accident. I have never consciously, intentionally planned anything. My ex-boss at BBH, the ad agency I spent most time at, Sir John Hegarty, has a wonderful mantra. John says, do interesting things and interesting things will happen to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm a great believer in living my life that way. So, you know, basically, Make Love Not Porn was a complete and total accident. It came about because I date younger men. They tend to be in their 20s. And about 16, 17 years ago now, I began realizing through dating younger men that I was experiencing very intimately and personally what happens when two things converge. And I stress the dual convergence because most people think it's only one thing. I realized I was experiencing what happens when today's total freedom of access to hardcore porn online meets our society's equally total reluctance to talk openly and honestly about sex. It's when those two things converge that porn becomes sex education by default, in not a good way. So I found myself encountering a number of sexual behavioral memes in bed. I went, whoa, I know where that behavior is coming from. I thought, gosh, if I'm experiencing this, other people must be as well. I didn't know that because 16 years ago, nobody was talking about this. Nobody was writing about it. This was me in isolation as a naturally action-oriented person going, I'm going to do something about this. So 15 years ago, I put up on no money a tiny clunky website at makelovenotporn.com that in its original iteration was kind of a public service announcement. The construct was porn world versus real world. Here's what happens in the porn world. Here's what really happens in the real world. I launched at TED, and for the reasons you've stated, my talk went viral. This is back in 2009. And my TED talk and Make Love Not Porn drove this extraordinary global response that I had never anticipated. Thousands of people wrote to me from all around the world, young and old, male and female, straight and gay, pouring their hearts out, telling me things about their sex lives and their porn watching habits they'd never told anyone before. And I realized I'd uncovered a huge global social issue. And so I then went, oh my God, I now have a personal responsibility. I have to take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that will make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. And so I turned it into a business designed to do good and make money simultaneously, which is what I believe the future of all business should be ultimately. And so today, Make Love Not Porn is the world's first and only user-generated and importantly 100% human-curated social sex video sharing platform. So we're kind of what Facebook would be if it allowed you to openly, healthily, sexually self-express, which it clearly doesn't. So the way to think about us is, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, Make Love Not Porn is the badly needed documentary. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful sex we all have in the real world. And what we're doing is we are socializing, normalizing, and destigmatizing sex, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight to promote consent, communication, good sexual values and behavior. We are literally sex education through real world demonstration.
And that's what I love about it is, like, you know, even when I was in college and I didn't know what the heck I was doing as it related to sex, it's like I grew up in a very sheltered home. There was nothing there. And then you run around the dorm rooms asking your friends and they're trying to teach you how to do a blowjob on like a Grey Goose bottle. And it, you get to like the time that you're supposed to, you know, perform, and it's all that education goes away. And so I do remember like needing guidance, not from other people that didn't know what they were doing. And that's why I am so infatuated with this business and why I do think it is the future. But what I specifically love is after that talk, when you launched the site, the global response, right? You said things happen by accident. It's that spark, it's that nonconformity that sometimes that big, we've seen it with even Me Too, right? When we don't talk about it and it comes out of the shadows, you're not alone anymore. So I want to dive deeper into some of those responses that you get. And I know that you share a lot, that you get vulnerable messages from men specifically. So what have you found in this response that helps you realize that what porn is now is not what it should be in the future?
Well, I think it's important to just be clear about the distinction there, Debbie. And I say that because it's a measure of how messed up we are about sex as a society that people look at, you know, people having sex on video go, oh my God, it must be porn. Porn is performative produced scripted entertainment. Mm-hmm. And Make Love Not Porn is real world sex. And, you know, we are literally, you know, I decided to bring every dynamic in social media to the one area no other social network platform allows. So we are doing something very different to porn, you know. And in that sense, Make Love Not Porn is a social experiment. You know, we put this platform out there. We don't dictate what real world sex is. You, our community, you, the world, show us. And by the way, you know, I've been saying for years, you know, real world sex is more innovative, more creative, more surprising, and way hotter than porn will ever be. And, you know, even now, 11 years on, to this day, we have a weekly team meeting at Make Love Not Porn, where our curation team reports on how many new videos we've received in the past week, how many new Make Love Not Porn stars, you know, anything of note in those videos. And to this day, you know, we'll be going, wow, did not know that was a thing.
That's awesome.
So it has been fascinating. I mean, you know, the biggest thing that we realized is that, and again, this is how we are completely different, you know. Porn is entertainment designed to arouse that you can masturbate to. Make Love Not Porn, as a unique business, has a unique capability. We have the proven power to change people's sexual attitudes and behavior for the better in a way that nothing else can. And so in the 11 years that we've been operating, we've taught countless young people that porn is not sex in the real world. You know, Gen Z loves us. We have saved numerous marriages and relationships. And that is literally how people write to us. They say, you saved my marriage.
Wow.
You know, we've inspired communications breakthroughs between couples. parents are buying their teenage and 20-something children's subscriptions to Make Love Not Porn because they tell us, I want my kids to see what happy, healthy, loving sexual relationships actually look like. And, you know, what is really interesting is that, as with any disruptive technology, use cases emerge that the founder never even thought of. So I was blown away when we first began hearing from survivors of rape, sexual assault, sexual abuse. We hear from female survivors, male survivors, trans non-binary survivors. They tell us that Make Love Not Porn helped them reclaim their bodies. We help them feel able to be sexual again post-trauma in a situation where porn is too triggering. And it's not just people who watch our videos. We have a number of Make Love Not Porn stars, as we call our contributors, who tell us that being able to share themselves sexually in a completely safe and trustworthy space has helped them process and heal from sexual trauma. I mean, that's not something I ever envisaged when I came up with this idea, but I'm so, so grateful it is. And yes, just to share with our listeners what you alluded to earlier, I designed Make Love Not Porn to be fully diverse and inclusive, and we are. Our members and our Make Love Not Porn stars are all ages from 18 to 80, all races and ethnicities. We're a global platform. Male, female, trans, non-binary, straight, LGBTQ, asexual. But in the 11 years we've been operating, we have discovered that Make Love Not Porn is especially a revelation to men. And this is really interesting because, you know, we get more appreciative emails and comments from men than anybody. I mean, women love us as well, but this is especially interesting with men because we are something unique that men will find nowhere else on the internet, which is a safe space where men can be and watch other men being open, emotional, and vulnerable around sex. And so men find our videos enormously moving. We regularly hear from men who write to us and say the same thing. They say, I just watched my first video on Make Love Not Porn, and afterwards I cried.
I've said
for years, I wish society understood that the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men, and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender is allowed to openly celebrate either of those facts. We'd all be so much better off if they were. I picked up a wonderful Twitter exchange a while back between two men. The first man had tweeted, as a joke, obviously, hey guys, I've got this really weird fetish. I've got this kink where I want to watch porn where people are honest, loving, loyal, decent, and really like each other. Hit me up in your hottest things. And another man replied and said, there's this website called Make Love Not Porn where you can watch real couples making love. He said, I watched a video where the woman said to her man, I love you, while they're making love. He said, sincerely, I cried when I heard that. Make Love Not Porn is one of the solutions to toxic masculinity.
Wow. That's very, very powerful. And I, you know, from my own experiences, I understand how men could find this safe space on the internet and be feel really empowered that this is a path that they want to pursue rather than what you said, porn is this highly produced thing for entertainment and masturbation. And I want to go into a little bit about your consumers that have written to you of how they healed through Make Love Not Porn and reclaim their bodies. Do you think porn is used as a form of abuse in some relationships?
First of all, because the 15 years I've spent working on Make Love Not Porn have turned me into, you know, an observer of, and to some extent, by the way, an advocate for the porn industry. And the first thing I want to say is that I encourage people not to use the word porn like it's all one big homogenous mass, because that's like saying, using the word literature like it's all the same thing.
Right.
The landscape of porn is as rich and infinitely varied as the landscape of literature. You know, there are as many genres and subgenres. And what people don't realize is that the porn industry is dominated by one massive monopoly, which should not be allowed to exist in any other industry, but nobody wants to bring antitrust legislation to porn. Mm-hmm. A company that used to be called MindGeek, that last year rebranded as Alo, owns everything. So they own Pornhub, YouPorn, RedTube, Brazzers, Sex.com, Men.com, et cetera, et cetera. And that is why porn can appear homogenous to people, because Alo own pretty much all the tube sites. I have a number of female queer pornographer friends who are producing very different content. Much more innovative, open, healthy, consensual, etc. But because of Alo's monopoly, they don't get the traffic, the numbers, the revenue they deserve, because nobody can find them. So I just want to contextualize that fact. Now, so this is an industry that is male dominated. And, you know, I will often get journalists calling me up to interview me about porn, and they will say, so Cindy, do you feel that porn objectifies women? And my response is, any industry that is dominated by men, led by men at the top, inevitably produces output that is objectifying, offensive, and objectionable to women. And I will then point them to the commercial advertising rates in the Super Bowl. Because my industry advertising is male dominated, so is Hollywood, so is music. Every industry in popular culture is dominated by men. And that is why what we see is content made through and for the male lens. So I just want to talk about some of the nuance of this before I answer your question, because honestly, the answer to your question, David, is yes. Yes, there are very unfortunate use cases for porn that are abusive. And, one thing that I deplore, and again, I do want to contextualize this for our listeners, because I bring a very unique perspective to porn. I bring a business perspective. And it's unique not because I'm anything, special. It's unique just because the people whose brilliant business brains populate the stages of TED, the pages of the Hard Business Review, have no interest in turning any of that business brilliance on the adult industry. But they should, because basically what we see play out within the adult industry are the same dynamics that play out in every other business sector. And again, I'm sharing this with you before I get more specific, because I want our audience to understand that things are not black and white. Yeah. So, porn is like any other industry that I study as a business consultant. It's gotten so big, it's gotten conventional. There are norms and conventions in porn, which is why so much of it's so repetitive and boring. It has fallen prey to that business syndrome I call collaborative competition, which is where everybody in a sector competes everyone else in the sector by doing exactly the same thing everyone in the sector is doing. And its business model is tanking because the old world order business model has been destroyed by the flood of free content online, and they haven't invented a new one. Now, every dynamic I've just described is also true of music. You know, it's true of television. It's true of publishing. It's just the way these dynamics manifest in porn is more controversial and distressing. So the explosive growth in extreme violent porn is not driven by evil, twisted, malicious forces that work within the porn industry. It is not driven by, oh my God, we've all become more depraved and corrupt as human beings. It's driven by, very prosaically, a bunch of guys scared shitless not making any money, doing what a bunch of guys scared shitless not making money do, which is play it safe. Oh look, they're all doing that, we should too. Oh, that must be what the consumer wants. Let's make that too. And I say that because, again, you know, this is a long-winded answer to your question, but circling back to your question, you know, the appalling thing about the explosion of what is known as faux-cest porn. So this is, for the benefit of our listeners, faux-cest is porn that plays on, obviously, one of the big taboos in society, which is incest. It is porn that needs to be legal, and so the players are always depicted as step-siblings, step-parents, etc. And on the one hand, you know, the popularity of this kind of porn is understandable because we are aroused by things that are forbidden, things that are taboo. But at the same time, the fact of the matter is that there are abusers out there showing their victims that porn to go, oh, look, this is what fathers do with their daughters. It's what everybody does to get people to groom their victims and to basically engage in criminal behavior. So yes, unfortunately, it is used in an abusive context. But as I say, I do want to stress that, you know, what we're talking about is not true of porn as a whole.
Right.
And part of the problem is, you know, honestly, the day we have a porn industry that is 50-50, led, influenced, managed, and run by women as well as men, that therefore targets 50% of its content equally at women, as opposed to misguidedly thinking men are the only audience, and that importantly makes 50% of its money out of women as much as out of men, is the day we have porn and a porn industry that looks completely different. More innovative, more disruptive, more open, more healthy, way more lucrative. And by the way, the same is true of every other industry. Movies, publishing, advertising, every area of popular culture.
Yeah, and I truly resonate with that a lot. And I appreciate you providing the nuances, because that's what these conversations are about. And that's why they're so important. I think that a lot of people, especially young people, who their first exposure is to porn, is that if it's a bad experience, that's how they write it off, right? But what they don't realize, it might not be in the lens that is healthy, realistic, consensual. And like you said, you have a lot of women friends in the space that are producing it, that it's not being elevated. But what you're doing and the content that your team filters and sees is arguably an art form, right? And that's how, you know, what I believe the foundations of Sparkle is how we as individuals, and maybe even with our intimate partners or partners, is that we can reclaim our art form and live lives no matter what these bigger companies are pushing to empower us. And so what would you say if someone has experienced, you know, something that content that hasn't been healthy for them as it relates to, you know, sex education, their development and their relationship with what it means to be intimate with someone, reclaim themselves through making their own content or absorbing the content that is on your site?
No, absolutely. Because, you know, here's another very interesting thing that we learned, David. So our Make Love Not Porn stars tell us that socially sharing their real world sex on our platform has been as transformative for them as socially sharing everything else in social media has been for the world at large. Mm. So for example, we have lots of masturbation videos. Mm. Again, fully diverse, you know, women, men, trans, non-binary, Make Love Not Porn stars. And the important thing here is that the vast majority of our Make Love Not Porn stars had never filmed themselves doing anything sexual before ever. They're doing it for us because they believe in our social mission. And so, you know, they tell us that filming themselves in this incredibly intimate act, sharing with our community, that has actually made them love themselves more. It's enhanced their sexual sense of self, their sexual self-esteem. You know, in some cases, that's why they do it. So we had a woman, I think this was last year. So she shared a masturbation video on Make Love Not Porn. And she said in the narrative, because you write your own, you know, context for your video, she said, all my life, I've been told that my vulva's ugly. It's too big. It's too flappy. You know, she said, I don't agree. And so I thought I would just share this video here and see what all of you think. And our community is amazing. I mean, in less than an hour of this video being published, there was a whole stream of comments going, what are you talking about? You're beautiful. You're amazing. We love you. We want to see more of you. You know, and that is wonderfully affirming, you know, for the Make Love Not Porn star in question. Then couples tell us that doing this transformed their relationship. Because when you decide to film yourselves having sex, you have to talk about it.
Of course.
And when you talk about it, doesn't matter how long you've been together, the conversation goes places it's never, ever gone before. You know, couples write to us and say, we thought we were open. Doing this just took our relationship to a whole new level. You know, and so it is absolutely, it's not just watching our videos, which inspire and educate and, you know, but equally, socially sharing your real world sex is also transformative. And the important thing about this is, you know, we are spearheading what we call the social sex revolution. The revolutionary part is not the sex, it's the fact we're finally making it social. We are taking the guilt, shame, and embarrassment out of it. And so people love the fact that, as I said, our platform has normalized all of this, whether you want to watch or whether you want to participate. It just feels completely natural and normal, and people love that. You know, I remember one couple saying to us that the great thing about how our videos have transformed their relationship was, they said, watching your videos and then talking about what we see in them feels as natural as watching something on Netflix and then discussing it. And then from there, it's just like one step further to naturally discussing our own sex life as a result. And that was how they had some really great breakthroughs. So it's not just what we do, it's the way that we do it.
Can you imagine that, listeners? Like, you are talking about what you've just watched, just like Netflix, as it relates to porn. Like, I personally feel, I'm so transparent. My partner and I, we talk about everything. And it's the healthiest relationship I've ever been in. But a lot of people don't know that. And it's because they carry this guilt and shame. And one of the quotes that I love from a Forbes article, I'm going to read it here. You say, my personal philosophy is to never waste your time banging your head against closed doors. Instead, engineer yourself into a position where the doors open automatically as you approach. Design the world that we want to live in, because when we do that, the men will desperately want to be a part of that as well. Obviously, the context of that quote is very different, but when I read it, I thought about everything. I thought about relationships, whether it was with intimate partners or friendships. I thought about it as it relates to our careers. And so I was hoping you could speak to this quote a little bit more and how you practice your personal philosophy as it relates to diminishing all your guilt and shame, and then also with the team that you have with Make Love Not Porn.
Sure. So first of all, I'll just share, you know, the particular philosophy that that quote comes out of is that I'm a great believer in be your own filter. So, you know, anyone who follows me on social will know, you know, my LinkedIn bio, my Twitter bio is, as you said, David, that, you know, I like to blow shit up. I'm the Michael Beer of business. Now, I use that line not as a bit of fun, a bit of whimsy. I use it entirely deliberately. Because when I characterize what I do in that way, it attracts to me the people who want what I do. It repels the ones who don't. Mm-hmm. And I want to repel the ones who don't because they're a waste of time, effort, and money. So first of all, absolutely be about what you want to be about, and you will attract your tribe to you, and you will keep away the people who don't get it. So, you know, with Make Love Not Porn, honestly, as I said, it happened by accident, but I think what it is reflective of is the fact that, you know, I, like you, grew up in a very repressed household in the sense that my father was English and very old-fashioned. My mother is Malaysian Chinese and equally old-fashioned. And I grew up in Asia. I grew up in Brunei, in Borneo, where nobody talks about sex, you know, openly. And so my parents never, ever, ever talked to me and my sisters about sex. You know, I had to educate myself, which I did because I was a voracious reader. And my father gave me very adult books to read as a child. And so I figured sex out from reading books, basically. But I absolutely internalized, you know, I mean, my mother, the only thing she ever said to us about sex was, girls, you stay virgin until you marry. So I totally internalized that. And so, you know, when I went to university, which is really where I first encountered men and straight, I spent a lot of time doing everything but, as you do, you know. But when I discovered sex, I went, oh, my God, this is bloody wonderful. You know, why are parents never saying about it? And so I think, you know, what I'm doing with Make Love Not Porn reflects very much that feeling. This is a wonderful, natural, normal part of life. And everything we do at Make Love Not Porn is replicating that fact. And then, you know, I have a tiny team at Make Love Not Porn You know, there are seven of us. It's a very diverse team. You know, we have on the team, we have Black representation, Latino representation, you know, half Asian representation in my case. You know, most of the team is queer. You know, we're male, female, non-binary, you know, et cetera. And you know, that's another one of my philosophies. You know, you absolutely, and I've been saying this to my world, the marketing advertising world, for literally decades. In order to market and sell to the world as it really is, your team has to reflect the world as it really is. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the lens through which you build something that is for everybody. So that's very much the approach what we take at Make Love Not Porn. And I will also say on the Be Your Own Filter front that, you know, I and my tiny team have fought a battle every single day for the past 15 years to not even grow Make Love Not Porn, but keep it going. Basically because every piece of business infrastructure other tech startups take for granted, we can't, the small print always says no adult content. And that's all pervasive. I can't get funded, I couldn't get banked, I can't put payments in place. But in a way, it's no bad thing to have a business that is self-selecting in terms of who engages with it, especially on the investor front. Mm-hmm. Because as an entrepreneur, you know, none of us need any more thoroughly depressing meetings than we absolutely have to have. You know, I have female founder friends who've pitched and been rejected 350 times. I don't know how they do it. I mean, most of the time, I can't even get across the threshold of an investor's office. But what that means is that when I do talk to investors, they are open-minded and they are actively interested. And again, that's my point about, you know, be who you are, put what you want to out in the world. You will attract the people who get it to you, and you'll keep away the ones who don't.
And to that point, that's when you teamed up with Jamila Jamil with iWay, because that was a, you know, an actual collaborative of values. So can you speak to how that transformed your funding strategy?
Sure. Yep. No, this was absolutely wonderful. So, you know, Jamila Jamil interviewed me for her iWay podcast some time back, and we had a great interview. She absolutely loves to Make Love Not Porn. She is very candid herself about the impact that porn had on shaping, you know, her own intimate life and her views of herself. And so she proposed to us that she lead an equity crowdfunding investment campaign, which I obviously jumped at because we've never done this before, because historically, as with everything else, no crowdfunding platform would touch Make Love Not Porn with a barge pole. You know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, you know, every new crowdfunding platform that launched and I approached would suddenly discover when I spoke to them that they were no adult content. And so, you know, having someone like Jamila, you know, be willing to lead this campaign and bring us to a platform that would therefore welcome us was huge for us. And so we, earlier this year, we launched our first ever, as I say, equity crowdfunding campaign, or WeFunder, with Jamila as our lead investor, encouraging her iWay community, and we encouraged our community and everyone, you know, to equity crowdfund us. And importantly, this is not donating, this is investing. You right. own a little piece of Make Love Not Porn. The minimum investment is $100, so it's, you know, very affordable. And we have wonderful people who put in, you know, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, which is great. And the really exciting thing about this is it's, so the campaign's running at the moment. We are targeting $1 million. We're a third, over a third of the way there. We've raised something like $360,000 to date. But what that funding to date has enabled us to do is to finally begin building what I've been asked for ever since day one of Make Love Not Porn, which is the 0 to 18 and beyond sex education expansion, makelovenotporn.academy. And so to our listeners, if you go to the URL makelovenotporn.academy, you'll see my vision laid out there. But basically, this is what I characterize as the Khan Academy of sex education. Because Khan Academy tutors on every other topic under the sun except this one.
Yep.
Educational technology, edtech, is exploding as a sector, not in this area. So we are building the academy on the same principles as Make Love Not Porn: user-generated, crowdsourced, curated revenue share. Because I'm not about reinventing the wheel. The academy is an aggregation play. We are building the go-to global hub for the best of the world's sex education content. And so the way it works is, as I said, this early funding has enabled us to begin building a minimum viable product. We're going to put a bare bones academy platform out there in a few months' time, which is very exciting. And we are inviting sex educators all around the world to share with us their own content. You know, coursework materials, books, videos, comic strips, whatever it may be. And I use the term educator very broadly. Sexual health and wellness experts, therapists, anybody informing and educating in this entire area. Now, we will curate at the heart of everything we do at Make Love Not Porn lies human curation. Human eyes will vet every piece of content to make sure we endorse it, it's safe, it's quality. And we will then publish all of this segmented by age appropriateness. So if you're a parent freaking out going, oh my God, my 6-year-old just started this, what do I say? You know, we will give you the tools and content to be able to have that conversation with a 6-year-old. If you're a teacher of the class of 14-year-olds, you know, here are your age-appropriate teaching materials. If you're an adult, access all areas. Adults are desperate for all this information. But the important thing is that the academy will be where children and young people can access sex education without parental teacher gatekeeping. And here's why that's important. I have a friend who's a mother, and as you have to these days, she monitors her kids' browsing history. Mm-hmm. So this happened a few years ago. Her son was 8 years old. She saw to a horror that on the family computer, he had Googled sex for children. So she freaked out, but did the right thing, stayed calm, sat him down. You know, I see you, you know, talk me through why. This anecdote is adorable and horrifying in equal measure because her son wanted to learn about sex. He was a child. He knew he was a child. He wanted to learn about sex in a child-appropriate way. He sweetly, innocently Googled sex for children. You can imagine the kind of thing that came back utterly traumatized. And so the can be where an 8-year-old boy can enter his age and we will only serve him age-appropriate sex education content. Now, some of this will be free to access for that example, but we'll also charge to buy the educator's products, you know, download books, you know, subscribe to courses, etc. And we'll take a commission, but that revenue will go straight to the educators. And that's because right now, nobody goes into sex education to make money. I have friends all around the world who are brilliant sex educators. They face all the same challenges I do. Their content gets blocked on Facebook, Instagram. Their accounts get suspended. They're not allowed to advertise either. They can't even make a living doing this. They've had to take other jobs to survive. And I want to change that because this is enormously valuable work.
Okay, that's why, listeners, you have to share this podcast everywhere, because Instagram will probably block everything we say. But seriously, to that point, obviously, I think there is a need and a desire for parents to want to talk about these things. But like you said, we both came from shelters, homes that didn't know how to talk about it. And I really think that's sometimes more of what it is, aside from the tradition and maybe religious values and things like that. If you were talking with a parent, how would you coach them to either, one, be comfortable with talking about sex, or two, helping them give their child resources so that maybe they don't have to be the ones to talk about it?
Yeah. No, sure. So first of all, there are two pieces of advice that I've been giving parents the last 15 years, because parents write to us, you know, all the time, as you can imagine. And I can't wait to, like, put this on the academy, me on the video, so I can stop sort of endlessly, like, you know, resharing it. But the first thing I say to parents today is that you cannot begin talking to your child about sex too early. And when I say, I don't mean literally you have to talk about sex. What I mean is the very first time your child asks where babies come from, you know, plays with their genitals, the most important thing isn't even what you say as much as how you say it. Never, ever get visibly embarrassed. Never get flustered. Never get angry. Never, like, you know, shut them up, change the topic, leave the room. Instead, answer them calmly, straightforwardly, truthfully. And by doing so, you will open up a channel of communication between you that will be there for them for the rest of their lives. And that's important because the one thing parents want more than anything else is for their children to be happy. This area will impact your child's happiness more than almost anything else. Mm. So why don't you do this? Then the second thing I say to parents is, today, when you talk to your child about sex, you must also at the same time talk to your child about porn. And this is a lot easier to do than parents think. All you have to do is a version of what I'm about to share, and you dial it up or down depending on the age of the child. So you go, you know, something along the lines of, so darling, we've just talked about sex. And you know how together we watch movies and videos and cartoons where things happen that aren't real. Well, there are also movies and videos about sex, and they're not real either. And because of that, they can be quite confusing. So we'd rather you didn't watch them till you're older. But if you ever stumble across something like that, or somebody shows you something, come and talk to us, we can explain it. Again, that's all you have to say. Because just, you end the conversation right there. Because just by saying that, you've done two very important things. The first is that you have set up in their heads, when they stumble across porn, as they will, that it's not real. And the second thing is you've said, come and talk to us about it. And you'll want them to do that because what they stumble across can be utterly traumatizing. But just so you know, Davey, the Academy is going to be global, like Maitland Porn is global. And we are going to have sex education content on there that is, as I said, you know, searchable by age appropriateness, but also by cultural sensibility. We will have Muslim sex education. We will have Christian sex education, Jewish sex education. All of this, by the way, is out there at this point in time, but no one's brought it all together in a one-stop shop platform. But, you know, to give an example, you know, I have a wonderful friend in India called Paramita Vora, and she started years ago a wonderful company called Agents of Ish, as in the Hindi term for love and desire. And they produce culturally appropriate, sensitive sex education for India. Mm. And it's brilliant. You know, they do things like, they have videos that spoof Bollywood musical numbers to create messages about consent. You know, they use traditional Indian folk legends and sagas, you know. And every time they release a new video, I share the shit out of it. But I noticed that this was a few years ago. You know, I reached out to Paro and I said, why do your videos have so few views on YouTube? And she said to me, I can't distribute these in India anywhere. You know, and so imagine the appeal of having on Maitland Porn Academy culturally appropriate and sensitive sex education by your community for your community, which is something that, you know, Asian parents especially have never been exposed to, but now they can find. It's up to them what they do with it. And, you know, but the whole idea is that I want you to be able to search the Academy by age appropriateness, cultural sensibility, and comfort level. You can pick and choose from, you know, our hub of sex education, what you feel happiest using with your children, sharing with them, educating yourself.
I mean, it's extraordinary. It's brilliant. I mean, you're right. There's not a platform where it's all in one. And distribution is always some of these barriers with as it relates to education. And we're seeing that on every level right now more than ever. And Ooh. So I guess what my next question is to you is how, with either the Academy or just on the internet in general, how can we utilize young people's voices to share and capture, you know, their experiences of what it means to have sex or be interested in sex?
Sure. So by the way, we are going to have a community message board on the Academy because we want to facilitate those conversations. And as you all know, Davey, right now, that ability is massively inhibited by social media platform censorship. Mm. We are going backwards as a society right now. Open, healthy education discussion about sex is being censored and deplatformed everywhere. And so young people cannot be as vocal and articulate as they would like to. And by the way, you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha after them, they absolutely are being much more open about all of this. But, you know, you will have seen, it's utterly ludicrous that you have to spell sex, segs, S-E-G-G-S, on Instagram, on TikTok, to be able to get important messages through. You know, it's funny, we were talking, because as we design the academy, we are talking to the educators for whom it's designed, to make sure that we are designing and building what they want as their shop window for their own products and materials. So we were talking to a wonderful sex educator who's based in the UK. I've known him for a long time. His name's Justin Hancock. He has a wonderful platform called Bish Sex Ed. It creates a ton of content. It's for young people 14 and older. And he was saying, you know, he said, I'm a 40-something-year-old man. I've been working as a sex editor for 20 years. I'm fully professionally trained. I am not spelling sex as S-E-G-G-S. I refuse to. I'm going to say sex. And because of that, his posts are suspended. He's censored. Mm. You can only see him on Instagram if you follow him. You know, it's ridiculous. And so to be frank, you know, what I always say is when you have a truly world-changing startup, you have to change the world to fit it, not the other way around. So I have a number of agendas with the Academy, you know, one of which is, as I said, to absolutely create a forum there where people can say anything they want to about all of this without censorship. But also, I want to prove concept. What I mean by that is people have said to me for years, oh, Cindy, you should go into schools. You know, make love at porn should be on the curriculum. And I've always said, no, I shouldn't, because anyone trying to bring sex ed into schools comes up against the Parent-Teacher Association moral panic. You know. But here's the thing. The people currently keeping sex ed out of schools don't know what it'd be like if they allowed it in. They just know we're really bad. In their heads, they have this abstract concept. Sodom and Gomorrah will ensue. When I can show you what doesn't exist anywhere at the moment, the best of the world's sex education content all in one place, and you can see for yourself at a glance how brilliant, informative, educational, healthy, and non-threatening it is. Mm-hmm. And you can choose, as I said, by age appropriateness, cultural sensibility, comfort level. That is when I can get sex ed into schools. I'm building outside the system to get into the system.
I mean, that's it's what you have to do. Fortunately and unfortunately, as it relates, yeah, relates to this, but I'm going to ask more of a question about you personally. Like I said at the beginning, Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth. And you said anything that you've done, you've fallen into by accident. And so can you speak to maybe this early moment where you felt like you had to pursue the path of make love, not porn? Was it a combination of moments, or was there something very specific that you remember that made you take that leap of faith? Because I do think some of us fall into these patterns of careers or even relationships that are just going with what society says. And you don't live by those rules. And that's why you're on this podcast.
So honestly, you know, that TED Talk changed my life. Mm. Because it was the extraordinary response to it that made me see what a huge social issue this was, you know. And so as the saying goes, the path appeared. I didn't choose this path, and it is a very, very challenging one. It chose me. You know, I've spent 15 years seeing every day firsthand the enormous human misery and unhappiness occasioned by the guilt, shame, and embarrassment that we've imbued sex with. Mm. And that is absolutely what is driving me to, you know, per that Forbes interview, build a different world, build the world that I want to live in. Also, I would just say that, you know, I get asked often, you know, Cindy, how do you keep going through all of these challenges? And fortunately, the thing that most motivates me is the dynamic that I call, I'm going to fucking well show you. You tell me it can't be done, I'm going to fucking well show you. You put an obstacle in my path, I'm going to fucking well show you. I take all of that daily discouragement, demoralization, depression, and I turn it into motivation and inspiration because I have to.
How would you advise someone to either, one, lean into their curiosities or that attitude of, well, I'm going to fucking show you?
To be frank, I would say, especially if you're a woman listening to this, we have not even begun to see how every single industry and every single area of life can be reinvented through the female lens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all it takes is for you to look around you and go, what do I feel is missing that should be in the world? What would I love to be able to use myself that I can't because nobody's built it? What do I think I could uniquely bring to the table that nobody else has? And then do that. And I encourage women to bring an additional dimension to that exercise. I have a friend, Natalie Molina-Nino, who is a wonderful entrepreneur investor. She wrote a book some years ago called Leapfrog, where she interviewed a ton of female founders, myself included, about the obstacles we face and how we overcame them. And it's called Leapfrog because the idea is that the women who come after us can leapfrog those obstacles because we've given them solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So in this book, Natalie has a great line that I quote all the time because, you know how, you know, we're always taught to kind of, you know, find what you're passionate about, you know, work in that area, start somewhere on that. And Natalie says, forget passion, find things you want to punch. And so my message to women is, and when you're looking around you, equally go, what makes me red hot with rage? What infuriates me every day? What do I feel unbelievably angry about? Build a solution to that. Because I promise you, there are millions of women and men who will pay good money for that. And we have a lot to be angry about.
Yes, we do. My therapist says, she says, there's nothing more powerful than a group of angry, fed up women. And it's so funny that you say that because I've shared this a few times on the show, but Sparkle started out as a sexual violence movement. I defined Sparkle to be your happiness, passion, and self-worth. And I wanted people, survivors specifically, to remember that nothing could dull their light. But as I was brainstorming what this looked like, and I wanted it to be a jewelry company. It was a whole creative process, right? I was young. But I remember going around, I was at a Jesuit university. I went to Xavier University, very conservative. And I remember just all of a sudden waking up one day, and I hated that they called this one girl a slut. I hated the word whore. I hated the word hoe. And I was like, these don't even mean anything. And I was like, my grandmother, who, you know, my strict Indian grandmother who was married at 14, you know, is going to have a different definition of what a quote unquote slut is, because in her eyes, it's just a woman who's had sex before they're married. But then what I did was I went around the dining hall and I asked everyone what their definition of sex was. And it wasn't inclusive. It was because everyone had a different definition and no one could define it. Got asshole answers. I got beautiful answers, you know, and that's what I think we really need to start are asking ourselves is what are our definitions of things? What empowers us? What makes us sparkle? And so, yeah, I do think sometimes, you know, passion and rage go hand in hand. I like what your friend said a lot because I definitely wanted to punch a few things in that dining hall that day.
Absolutely.
Well, I love the Academy and I know you have a lot else planned. Is there anything else that you wanted to share about Make Love Not Porn or how users can come to your site and support the community and be a part of the community, especially if they're nervous to enter this chapter?
Sure, yep. So I would love everybody listening to join us at makelovenotporn.com. Please sign up and subscribe. Subscriptions start at $10 a month, so it's very affordable. Do consider becoming a Make Love Not Porn star. We'd love to have you. And also, please do go to wefunder.com/makelovenotporn and invest in what I and my team are doing, because that is how we will be able to change the world through sex, when all of us rally around, you know, basically reinventing sex through the female lens in a way that, as you said, Debbie, men will really, really welcome. And they're already welcoming that at Make Love Not Porn. So, and also, by the way, you can follow me and Make Love Not Porn at Cindy Gallup, at Make Love Not Porn on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. You can follow me on LinkedIn. And I'm on Facebook. And Make Love Porn is on Facebook at MLNP TV.
Listeners, I'm not going to lie. I do have a LinkedIn problem, but I log on to LinkedIn and I make sure I go see Cindy's posts every single week. So I will share all these show notes in the show notes, listeners. And yes, please check out Make Love Not Porn. It's very, very important. It embodies the Sparkle movement. And so, Cindy, I'm so grateful to have you on today. Thank you so much for all your time and Sparkle On.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and you bet I'll sparkle on.
Love it. Take care.